Welcome back to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and Mr. Taylor, whose writings on the industry you can regularly read over on The Wrap, and whose musings on the Mission Impossible movies you can listen to on Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. He and I are recording this week's show on Wednesday, April 24th, 2024, and you are just wrapping up with a junket, right?
A very full day with the cast and crew of Outer Range on Prime Video, which if you haven't seen, Jim, is a very entertaining show, and the second season is really great. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay. So, but after a busy week of work, do we feel the need to head down to Anaheim? Because Pixar Fest is starting at Disneyland this Friday, April 26th. Going to run through August 4th. What's weird is online, on social media, they're hinting at something huge and spectacular and unusual happening at this. Do you have any idea what that is? Or
no, I don't think anything fun, strange, or unusual has happened at the Disneyland park in quite some time, now that I think about it. I mean, I saw a video of Buzz and the house from Up gliding over the castle, which was very impressive.
That was the sort of a soft opening, a test of the nighttime fireworks show over the didn't they do that last weekend?
Yes. Yeah, it was, yeah, whatever the fire. I mean, I love the Walt Disney Animation Studios kind of version of this show. So, yeah, it looks fun. I mean, you know, Jim, I was just thinking to myself, is it already Pixar Fest again? You know, that's how I gauge time.
And again, you know, then, oh, did I get the cards? Did I buy the wrapping paper? You know, Pixar Fest comes just once a year, Drew. You got to prep.
I know. You got to make sure Nancy has something, you know, for this celebratory time of year.
There we go. All right. But again, you know, let's be honest here. A little expensive to go to Disneyland these days. Also, you need a reservation, you know. Okay. But on the other hand, folks, if you can't afford a ticket to Disneyland, not to worry. You want to see some really cool Disney stuff. Head to Van Eaton Galleries, where right now, in fact, running through May 2nd, there is the preview of the Joel Maggie auction, part two. And Drew and I were talking about this when we were pre-gaming tonight's show, and Joel, there's just no other way to describe this. Joel was kind of a crazy collector, and the fact that this is part two and there are still 1,500 items to get through, including, well, you were just looking at what, a Busby Berkeley girl,
yeah,
from the Great Movie, right?
Some of these things seem like they could only be acquired through some black market dealings.
Something getting tossed over the fence late at night, is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, dear. Okay, well, all right. As for the auction itself, that's being held over 2 days, starting on Saturday, May 4th. Lots 1 through 752 will be listed then. And then on Sunday, May 5th, the remaining auction items, up to 1,485, those all go on the block. But if you're out in L.A. and have some time, this is located in Studio City on Ventura Boulevard, right?
Yes, right across the street from my veterinarian. So, you know, anytime we take Nova in, yeah, we have to walk by and see what's going on over there. Yeah.
Oh, how cool. Yeah. Okay, but again, it's now through May 2nd, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And, you know, they actually, you know, if you go to the Van Eaton website, you know, they flat out say, charge your phone before you come here, because you're going to want to take a lot of pictures. Lots of cool items to see. And speaking of cool items, want to thank Jose M., who just, you know, a lovely guy, ran around Mexico getting for myself and Drew a complete set of the Elio Happy Meal toys. Now, mind you, I got mine. DHL drove up the driveway. just yesterday. Whereas Drew, they tried to deliver to you. In fact, when we're done here, remind me. I have a number for you to call at DHL to get okay. your Happy Meal toys.
Okay.
All right. Anyway, we will have more actual news in a moment. But first, want to remind you that the news portion of Fine Tuning is brought to you by Touring Plans. And if you're headed down to Orlando anytime soon and are thinking of sampling some of the theme parks you'll find down there, Touring Plans can help provide you with the info you need to make the best use of your time. It can save you time by helping you avoid the very longest lines and also help you save money. So check them out at touringplans.com today. So anyway, Drew, on last week's show, we talked about Annecy. And in fact, we mentioned that you will be headed there again this year. But we've had some news break about individual panels and presentations there. For starters, the Ultraman Rising is going to stage its world premiere there on June 12th. And by the way, I want to remind you that the art and making of Ultraman Rising, written by a very good close friend of the show here, you know, one Drew Taylor, you know, that you know, seriously, folks, go pre-order your copies, okay? Let's see, also, but that's for Netflix's presentation there, and they're also going to be there's going to be under the Netflix banner an exhibition of puppets that were used in the production of the next Wallace and Gromit movie, which will also be showing up on that streaming service. But Drew, you have the full rundown on what's going to be presented, right?
I got to chat with the Annecy team this morning, which was really fun, and you know, talk about the things that they're really excited about. There's a bunch of stuff. I think we're going to talk about this movie a little later in the show, but there will be a work in progress screening of Transformers 1. There will be a screening of Inside Out 2. Obviously, as you said, the world premiere of Ultraman Rising, which you know, I'll be there handing out stickers or something, I'm sure. But a lot of really great, you know, smaller things too, like the Imaginary by Studio Ponoc from Japan, which will be on Netflix later this year, and the Michael Hazavinicius. I'm not saying his name right, but he won the Oscar for The Artist, his first animated feature. The Most Precious of Cargos is going to be there. Additionally, Jim, you'll love this. They've already announced that there was going to be a Wes Anderson thing there. But you know who else they're honoring? None other than Terry Gilliam, which is very cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So he'll be getting his award and he'll also be doing a presentation. Yeah. So I think maybe this is the year you have to go, Jim. So
So are they going to showcase all of Terry's, you know, I mean, he did all of that amazing paper cutout stuff for Python back in the day. Or is this, I mean, like a whole retrospective of his career? Or
I think it's more just about, his contributions to animation. So I'm sure it'll be, Jabberwocky and other things. Yeah. So
cool.
Okay. Yeah. So, things like they're going to show stuff from Moana 2. There's going to be an Inside Out 2 screening. They're going to do things for the Big City Greens movie. They're going to have a screening of that. So it just sounds like a really great, well-rounded presentation this year. And like you said, Wild Robot will be there. There'll be a anniversary screening of How to Train Your Dragon.
And a celebration of, the 30th anniversary.
That's right.
Of the founding of DreamWorks Animation Studio, right? So
I'm always so amazed because they'll do like this How to Train Your Dragon screening will be outside. And it's like you walk out at 11 o'clock at night and there is a field full, literally crammed with people watching movies that have been on television roughly 10,000 times in America. But that are still, you know, the power of them speaks volumes. They did like a Fantasia 2000 screening last year and it was packed. I mean, it's just... it's such a fun place, and I can't wait to go back. And Jim, I think you might have to go this year.
You're making this very tempting, and especially, you know, a big screen How to Train Your Dragon. Now, that was released by Paramount back in the day, right?
I can I don't know if it was Paramount or Universal. I know Universal, okay. I think Universal owned the studio by the time the third one came out. But
okay, no, excellent point, excellent point. But speaking though of Transformers 1, I finally sat down and watched the trailer for that, and that is not what I expected for a Transformers movie. And the other thing, just looking at the credits of this thing, really, Josh Cooley of Toy Story 4?
That's right. Yeah.
Face it. Yeah. How many Transformer movies have there been now? But this one actually looks like this is fun. This looks good. You work that side of the street now, given that the official Mission Impossible podcast. What have you been hearing about
that? I've heard that Paramount is very proud of it, mm-hmm. and that they are going to really screen it a lot. Obviously, it's going mm-hmm. to be at Annecy, and that they are very bullish about both its commercial and its, you know, awards prospects. Okay. But, you know, the animation was done by Industrial Light and Magic, mm-hmm. which also did the animation for a movie called Ultraman Rising that will also be at Annecy. So
there we go.
Yeah, it's plug, fun. It looks really fun. I love Josh, and I hope he has so much success with this, but
no, absolutely. I that said though, we should mention that the release date just got pushed back by a week. September 20th. And in fact, I heard that the reason they did that is Beetlejuice comes out on the 14th, and they wanted a little breathing space.
Well, yeah, but the 20th had Wild Robot and Transformers 1, so Wild Robot has now moved from the 20th to the 27th. Yeah, and there's also a big they want the most IMAX screens as well, so that was another factor. Yeah.
Oh man, I hate this. I hate when it's like that Murderer's Row, where you get like three films that you want to see coming out back to back to back, and what they potentially do to each other's box office. But okay. Now, again, but Transformers are robots, automaton. What are they?
They are, yeah. I mean, they're robots in disguise, if the song is correct. But
okay, yes, there we go. Yeah. So now, speaking of robots, though, Robot Dreams, which folks who listen to this podcast know, Drew spoke up. Didn't you do a panel for that?
Yeah, I did a few Q&As with Pablo Berger, who is absolutely mm-hmm. amazing. And yeah, okay. that... It's an amazing movie. I hope everybody goes and sees it. But if you watch the trailer and didn't cry, I think you get a buffalo nickel. So, yeah.
There we go. Well, no. The nice thing is we're now actually going to get a chance to see Robot Dreams, because it has stateside distribution. Starting on May 31st, Neon has taken it on. And I want to say... starting major metropolitan like New York, San Francisco, that sort of thing, and potentially going wider.
Yeah.
Since you first told me about this, we're very much looking forward to this just sweet, weird, wordless movie, right?
Yeah.
Basically a silent film.
Yeah.
Speaking of sweet but not wordless, Bluey. On the heels of The Sign, which adults are still weeping about all over, sitting at home watching Disney Plus, they dropped a surprise episode this past weekend called Surprise. Debuted on Disney Junior, then followed on Disney Plus. And by the way, Drew, again, given that you have the lovely Nova, who you and Katie did a wonderful thing of rescuing, a dog from the Korean meat markets, wanted to let you know that Bluey evidently is an Australian,
she's a sheepdog.
So I made the mistake of actually going to look at an Australian cattle dog, and Nova is a really beautiful dog compared to the Australian cat. They are not attractive. Oh my God.
Shots fired.
Yeah. Well, no, they just, somebody did some wonderful design on the children's television show, but in real life, woof, kicked by one too many cattle. All right. Anyway, we just talked about animation for families. On the other hand, animation for adults, Hulu, just ordered a presentation of Journey to the Center of the Internet, which is supposed to be a new animated series for adults, an adult comedy coming from 20th Century Television, excuse me, 20th Television Animation. And Drew, can you walk us through this? Because again, this is not a pilot. This is like, again, it's a presentation. It's like, what, 5-10 minutes of what the show is potentially going to be about? And this is what the executives at Hulu are going to eyeball before a pilot? Is this how it's done these days?
I guess. I mean, I get that Hulu has become kind of the place for adult animation with, you know, the reruns of Family Guy and Bob's Burgers and then Solar Opposites and Futurama and all of this.
Yep.
But yeah, I didn't really understand the presentation aspect of it. Mm-hmm. It's about two brothers with the ability to warp inside the internet where the magnificent hellscape of cyberspace has come to life. I'm not really sure how this is different from, say, Ralph Breaks the Internet, or if we're going to go back even further, a little show that is very close to my heart called Freakazoid. Or even Reboot, for that matter. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what this presentation means. I'm assuming it just means that no final animation will be commissioned.
Wow. Wow.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, the team, much success, you know, but it just seems like, wow, don't you want to see what it looks like when it's animated? Oh, no. It just,
you can use your imagination, Jim.
There we go. And speaking of adult animation, Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2 debuted on Blu-ray just this past week on April 23rd. And now, mind you, it's been available to stream for a while, and I was just watching the 6-minute clip of this thing. And again, the people at DC who do these home premieres do such great work. But at the same time, I just watch them, and it's like, oh, they did a really good job. I hope there aren't any kids watching this, because, you know, it's like, you know, there's Batman about to kill the Joker, and it's just like, I don't know if the kids are ready for that. Well, all right. Anyway, and also worth noting, just in the past week, we are celebrating the 20th anniversary of Shrek 2 this year. And what was interesting is DreamWorks decided that they would, you know, the way they'd celebrate that is they'd put Shrek 2 back into theaters. And what's kind of interesting is Shrek 2 did well enough to wind up in the top 10 at the box office this past weekend, which, you know, it kind of breaks my heart to say that didn't happen with Soul. That didn't happen with Red. That didn't happen with
Luca.
Luca, yeah. And it's but Shrek 2, it did. So in honor of that, recognizing that, when we get back from this break, Drew and I are going to take a look back at this Shrek sequel and how it fits into the whole history of DreamWorks. But first, this. And we're back. And again, we're about to get started talking about Shrek 2, which, you know, makes me think of the original Shrek. And again, because I'm old, that makes me think about the original casting for Shrek. The voice was Chris Farley. And by the way, a quick aside here, friend of the show, Josh Gad. Do you see the news about Josh making his directorial debut?
I did. I think it might be a little premature to talk about it because I don't think they've been set up at a studio yet. But they're putting it together right now. I hope everything falls into place. As you know, Hollywood is a capricious beast. But yeah, I think that this sounds great. He's going to be directing a Chris Farley biopic with Paul Walter Hauser as Chris Farley, who I saw him talking about, sort of referencing the project on social media. So maybe it's a little bit further along than we imagined. But I think that's a great great choice.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing is when I saw that, you know, the trades announces actually reached out to Josh and, you know, I actually quizzed him about whether or not they were going to feature the fact that, that Chris was the voice of Shrek originally, because it's like, if he was, I offered to set him up with Tom Cito, who I want to say was head of story for at least at some point in the production of this DreamWorks animation film. And Tom has these amazing stories of Chris in the booth. And that how, for example, I guess at one point, Shrek was supposed to sing Feelin' Groovy. And again, he said, and the thing is that Chris couldn't quite figure out, am I supposed to be angry? Am I supposed to be, you know, am I supposed to be sincere? And he said, you know, just watch this guy, you know, sort of turn himself inside out to deliver a decent vocal performance. By the way, what's also interesting, folks, is if you really want to see what Chris Farley would have done with Shrek, a number of things are now available over on YouTube and thereabouts. There's a very early CG test where it's the really, really ugly Shrek, the one that leans into, you know, the way William Stagg depicted the character. But
which
the
version? One... Well, there's been a few. I mean, the propeller heads test was one. Yeah, I mean, there were so many weird versions. And the propeller heads were a group that included J.J. Abrams.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. There were a lot of takes, Jim. There were a lot.
No. In fact, it's so interesting you say that, because Cito was telling me about, they were trying. In fact, in this weird moment where they knew that Disney was making Dinosaur with CG on top of live action background footage, you know, background plates. And so what DreamWorks decided they'd try, because they were trying to get, you know, we want this to look like a fairy tale, but how do we make this look like a fairy tale? And what they tried was they built these elaborate miniatures and then put the CG on top of that to give, you know, and it was one of these things where it doesn't quite work the way we want it to.
Yeah.
But again, what's kind of interesting about this version of Shrek is that it's a younger Shrek. It's also, I mean, he's angry, but he's also very sweet. And in this version, this was when Janine Garofalo was the voice of Fiona. And, you know, the story point at this point is that Fiona has, because she's been locked away in the tower for as long as she has, she's angry, she's bitter, you know, she's sarcastic. And it's during the walk back to Farquaad's castle, it's the sweetness of Shrek that softens Fiona, rather than, I think the Finnish film sort of inverts that. But the whole time this is going on, Eddie Murphy is always the voice of the donkey. I mean, he was there basically from day one. And the other thing, as Drew mentioned, there were so many different iterations, so many different ideas that they were trying, you know, when they were trying to figure out what Shrek was. And there was one version where Shrek and his mother and his father lived under a bridge. And in fact, the family job was, you know, like the Billy Goat's Gruff. They were supposed to be the ones who prevented people, you know, it's like, well, you're crossing my bridge, you got to pay a toll. And so the day that Shrek is supposed to enter the family business, he goes on to steps onto the bridge, and there's a knight up there. And but the thing is that Shrek has never seen a knight before, and this, you know, the guy in the shining armor and on top of the white horse, and he's actually very kind to Shrek, you know, and he's just like, you're a monster, but again, this is your bridge, and I'll do what you want. And he rides off, and it's Shrek decides I want that job, I want to be a knight. And
I've heard stories about this whole story avenue that they went down for months. Yeah.
You know, but the thing that always intrigued me about this version is the mother and father who live with Shrek under the bridge. they were voiced by Tom Bosley and Marion Ross, as in, you know, the parents from Happy Days. I mean, it was one of these things where, you know, you want to talk about shorthands about good, sweet mom and dad, those voices coming out of ogre faces. I mean, but all of this went away when Chris died in December of 97. And the thing you have to remember is the first DreamWorks movie is still, it's 10 months away. Ants doesn't get released till, October of 98. And here's Shrek after all of this exploration, all of this early recording. They got to start over. And but anyway, they eventually hire Mike Myers. They pair him with Janine Garofalo, and that doesn't work. Then I'm blanking her name now. Who they hired for Fiona?
Cameron Diaz.
And you know, she did a wonderful job. And the finished product doesn't arrive in theaters till May of 2001. But in between, we get Prince of Egypt, we get Road to El Dorado, we get Chicken Run, and we get Joseph, King of Dreams. And what's kind of ironic about this is anyone who knows the history of DreamWorks Animation is Katzenberg had decided that the way he was going to create an exclusive, so to speak, in the world of animation is he was going to do like the animated Ten Commandments. He was going to cater to that. And it's like, well, Disney doesn't work that side of the street. We'll get that side of the street, and that will be our revenue stream. And it didn't quite work out that way. So when Shrek came out and hit big, Katzenberg was like, well, look, I worked at Disney. I know what to do with fairy tales. You know, we need to get to go into theme parks. We need to do a Broadway musical. And more to the point, we need to do a sequel. And so, especially on the heels of Shrek taking home the very first Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. You know, at that point, almost for a time, wasn't Shrek basically the de facto icon for DreamWorks?
Yeah, I would argue that he still is. I mean, who else would? You know, I was just at DreamWorks on Sunday. I was moderating a Orion in the Dark Q&A, and yeah, they've got that big Shrek statue outside, and
they do. Okay, so all right. So anyway, it hits big. They begin work on the sequel, but what's interesting is that we get our theme park attraction, Shrek 4D. And Drew, I actually have a good friend who worked on this, who big time Disney fan. That's why, you know, when you'd walk around the queue for Shrek 4D, there were the things, you know, the posters like The Enchanted Tick Room and Great Moments with Mr. Farquaad. You know, this is a friend who grew up in Orlando and went to the Disney park. So given the opportunity to really beat on him, he took it and ran. And but what was kind of interesting is that DreamWorks basically gave them the box. It's like, this is where you can set your attraction. You can, from after Shrek and Fiona get married to when they arrive at the honeymoon suite, that's all you get. And, you know, you figure out how to make that work. And what they hadn't anticipated at DreamWorks is that they would genuinely struggle to come up with a story that worked for Shrek 2. And when they saw Shrek 4D, and it was as good as it was, they were like, oh, we may borrow a few ideas from that. And speaking of borrowing ideas, Drew, do you have a story to share with the class?
I think we've both heard this story from multiple sources that the first Shrek, the first two Shreks were based on, in part, from a stolen pitch by our good friend Eric Goldberg, legendary Disney animator and professor and, you know, animation historian who can tell you who animated what frame of which Mickey Mouse short. I mean, he's really an exceptional mind. And he came up with a pitch for, I believe it was a Frog Princess, right?
I want to say yes. But again, it was, didn't he describe it? It was Jay Ward-ish,
yeah.
You know, kind of a Bullwinkle, you know, a Fractured Fairy yes. Tales kind of a thing.
And that this project had kind of gone down in flames on a Friday. And then Katzenberg called him over the weekend and said, is that thing really dead?
Mm-hmm.
And he said yes. And then on a Monday, Shrek had a very different trajectory. So anyway.
Okay. So, but again, what I like, and this is the part of the story, Vogue, you know, the notion of, you know, borrow a little bit from Disney, borrow a little bit from the theme park attraction, Shrek 2! But I want to mention that one of the ideas that was revisited for Shrek 2 is that, of course, everybody who knows the finished film knows that Shrek and Fiona go off to see her parents. But the notion was that, you know, well, shouldn't they also, they just got married, shouldn't they visit Shrek's parents? And it was revisiting the notion of the sweet, and in fact, that was supposed to be the funny part, that there's this sweet little couple and Shrek is so big and so gruff. And it's like, how did these sweet people birth that beast? But again, it tells you a lot about how DreamWorks works. Early on, again, it was Tom Bosley and Marion Ross. And now it was like, all right, who are the movie stars that we can get to voice these characters? And that eventually fell off to the side of the road. But again, this film is in production from 2002 through the late winter, early 2003-2004. And I guess we have to talk about what happened with, like, Spirit of the Cimarron and Sinbad, Legend of the Seven Seas. That was during what was the name again? Trigigital.
Oh,
the,
God.
The flirtation between hand drawn and digital or CG.
Oh, God. This is from the same man who coined Thrillomedy.
Okay.
I like both of those. But, you know, those movies also were instrumental in the fact that, like, maybe celebrities didn't matter if your movie had Brad Pitt and Michelle Pfeiffer. And
let me tell you a story. I was at, in fact, Nancy will bear me out because she was there. I moderated a voice panel at Comic-Con, I want to say in 2003. And Billy West was on the panel, and somebody brought up, again, they opened it up for Q&A, and somebody brought up that the fact that Brad Pitt was voicing the title character in Sinbad. And Billy proceeded to go off about how Brad Pitt, you know, like, you know, yeah, Brad Pitt, you know, there's a guy who needs more work. All right, you know, take a job away from a professional animation voice person so Brad can buy another car, you know. And he, I remember at the height of the rant, he was talking about how he would saw off Brad Pitt's foot and shove it down his throat. And he'd say, eat your own foot, you know, Brad, take jobs away from animation voice people. But but yeah, to bring this full circle, to give you some idea of the power of Shrek at this point, DreamWorks, if you bought a ticket for opening weekend of Sinbad, Legend of the Seven Seas in July of 2003, and the Shrek attraction, by the way, had only just opened in May at Universal. In fact, I want to say it was the 27th in Hollywood, and then a week later opened in Orlando. But if you bought an opening day ticket, they actually gave you a CD that had, you know, like this computer program where you could watch, like, individual frames from the 4D attraction. They were hoping that would boost the box office. Didn't happen. And pretty much right after that, Trigigital was dead, and more to the point, hand-drawn was basically dead at DreamWorks. And then from there, you know, Shrek 2 comes out and does ridiculously well at the box office. So, of course, we're going to get a Shrek 3 in May of 2007. But again, remember Katzenberg. It's a Disney playbook. So I got my theme park attraction. It's now time for Shrek the Musical. Have you ever managed to see that?
No, no. Didn't Sam Mendes direct it or was going to direct it?
I want to say yes. We did, Nancy and I did get to see it. It tried out in Seattle in the late summer, early fall of 2008, eventually opened on Broadway in December of that same year. And you'll love this. And again, this Katzenberg being Katzenberg. What theater in New York did he pick? The Broadway Theater, which, you know, back in 1928 was known as the Colony Theater. That's where Steamboat Willie premiered. As the story goes, you used to be able to go to the Broadway Theater, and there was a big bronze plaque right there in the lobby that Disney had paid for and installed during one of Mickey's birthday celebrations in this theater, back in October of 1928, the very first synchronized sound cartoon starring Mickey Mouse was, and somehow that disappeared when Shrek moved in, and that no one ever found it.
They cut off its hands and feet and threw it in the East River.
There we go. So now the interesting thing, Shrek didn't necessarily have a long Broadway one, or I want to say it was, 12 months, 15 months, toured extensively, and again, you got to get to Jeffrey. It is now one of the most popular, most produced musicals at the community theater, high school level, college level. It makes a bloody fortune for them. What was interesting is that Katzenberg, on the success of that, wanted to explore doing a Kung Fu Panda musical. And I know they workshop it, but it never got much further along than that. But since then, I mean, the Shrek film franchise continued. We got Shrek Forever After in May of 2010. And when we got a button on that, we got our first ever Puss in Boots movie October of 2011, and just December of 2022. We got the wonderful Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. I think looked amazing, and I really enjoyed that movie. I would argue that was a better film than the original Puss in Boots. And now Shrek 5 at some point in the not too distant future, right?
Boy, I wish I could say, Jim, but I think you're on the right path. You're on your way to far, far away, and I will say,
okay, yeah, there we go. All right. Well, all right. Well, I guess we'll leave that there for now. But again, I gotta say, again, it was nice to read that news in the trades this weekend that, you know, Shrek 2 was back in the top 10 at the box office. So I just wish we could have said the same thing about Luca and Soul and Turning Red, three films that people should have gotten to go see in theaters. But all right. And speaking of things that people should do, if you are not already listening to the Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast that Drew does with his talented co-host, Charles Hood, you are missing out on such good stuff. And I, by the way, did you catch the latest Looking at Lucasfilm? Because Brian God basically blithered about how much he enjoyed your Penelope Spheres interviews, and that he loves that you guys have been throwing the spotlight on so many of Paramount's directors of great Paramount.
Yeah, well, we're coming up on I think we're finishing our Jonathan Lynn two-parter. So if you're a fan of Clue, you should be listening. And then I think we're going to Alexander Payne next, who had three great Paramount movies. So yeah.
Wow. Okay. Cool. All right. And speaking of podcasts, we have a few here at Jim Hill Media we'd like you to check out. Of course, Disney Dish that I do with Len Testo. We just mentioned Brian Gunn, who I do Looking at Lucasfilm with. We also have the Epic Universal podcast, which I do with Eric Hersey, the talented gentleman who produces and edits a lot of the shows here that actually should be dropping later this week. Let's see, what else? I Want That Too with Lauren Hersey, Eric's equally talented bride. That's about merch. And let's see. Should also mention Disney Unpacked, our first ever video series, which Len and I have been producing in collaboration with veteran Imagineer Jim Shull. We just this month, we're just now wrapping up our series of shows about Buzz Lightyear and the various Space Ranger spins and Astro Blasters around the globe.
Can we guarantee no AI art in the videos?
Yeah, that was
unfortunate. We all make mistakes, Jim. We all make mistakes.
Okay, then next month, starting in May, we're doing a series of shows about the stunt shows of the Disney parks. And in fact, I think tomorrow we're recording something about that. What is it? Alice and the Red Queen, back in Wonderland thing that the Disneyland Paris show. It's a BMX, but you know, because again, that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Lewis Carroll is BMX bicycles. All right. Anyway. Okay. Social media. That where are we these days, Drew?
I'm everywhere, but I usually, sadly, I'm just still on Twitter/X at Drew Tailored, like a tailored jacket. But yeah, come find me. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I am also over on X, Twitter, whatever, and Instagram is Jim Hill Media, and also on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. Final favor, folks, as we head out the door here, if you could go over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review, not just the show you're listening to right now, Fine Tuning, but also Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. Mr. Taylor and I would appreciate that. And I guess that's going to do it for this week. So thanks for listening, and Mr. Taylor and I will be back soon.